All right, let's jump into this legal thriller, huh? The attorney-client privilege, we all know it's so important, right? Like
yeah.
the bedrock of the whole justice system, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Open communication between a lawyer and their client.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. It's really the foundation of trust. You know, if clients don't feel like they can speak freely, the whole system kind of breaks down, doesn't it?
Right, exactly. But what happens when that privilege, you know, that sacred bond, is maybe possibly being used to hide something, something darker, something criminal, even. I mean, that's when things get really interesting. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It gets murky.
Super murky. And that's exactly what's going on in this United States v. Zolin case. Have you ever heard of this one?
Zolin. Oh, yeah. Landmark case. Definitely a landmark case. I mean, it pretty much changed how we look at this whole attorney-client privilege thing, especially when there's suspicion of, well, you know, the crime fraud exception.
Right, right. Okay, so for our listeners who maybe haven't cracked open Zolin in a while, can you set the scene for us? What exactly happened?
Okay, so picture this. You've got the IRS. They're going after the Church of Scientology, right? Big investigation. And they suspect, you know, some major financial issues, let's just say.
Okay, juicy.
Juicy is right. So they're digging into L. Ron Hubbard's tax returns, and they want access to these tapes and documents, you know, stuff that the church has. But of course, the church, what do? They pull out the attorney-client privilege card, say, nope, can't touch these. These are confidential talks with our lawyers.
Classic, classic. So we've got a bit of a locked room mystery here.
Yeah.
The IRS thinks there's something incriminating in those documents, right?
Okay.
But they can't even take a peek because of that privilege wall. What do the lower courts say about this whole thing?
Well, at first, the lower courts, they kind of sided with the church, you know? They basically said, look, IRS, you need to show us the fire before you can use the fire extinguisher. Like, prove there's a crime first.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a catch-22, isn't it? How can you prove wrongdoing if you can't even look at the evidence?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Seems a bit backward. So I'm guessing this whole thing went up to the Supreme Court, right? Had to.
Of course, yeah. This wasn't just about, you know, some tax dispute. It was huge. It was about the limits of attorney-client privilege itself. Everyone was watching to see what the Supreme Court would do.
Huge, huge. So was the big question, like, can a judge actually look at these potentially privileged documents, you know, do what they call an in-camera review, to see if there's actually a crime there, even if there's no solid proof yet?
Exactly. That's the core of it. And the stakes were high, really high. We're not just talking about one church and the IRS here. We're talking about, you know, the balance between confidentiality and making sure this privilege isn't being used to hide criminal activity.
Yeah.
A huge deal for lawyers and clients everywhere.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. Okay, so what did the Supreme Court decide? Lay it on us. What was the ruling?
Well, first, they recognized the problem, right? Needing to prove a crime without seeing the potential evidence. They basically said, that independent evidence rule, it's just not practical.
So they got rid of it, threw it out.
Well, not entirely. They created kind of a middle ground, a threshold standard, they called it. Instead of needing ironclad proof up front, they said the side trying to get around the privilege, the IRS in this case, they just need to show enough evidence that it's reasonable to believe that, hey, those documents, they might reveal a crime.
Okay, I'm following. So it's less about having the smoking gun, more about showing there's enough smoke to justify taking a closer look.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. Think of it like getting a search warrant. Investigators, they don't have to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt to get a warrant. They just have to show probable cause. This threshold in Zolin, kind of like that.
I see. And in the Zolin case itself, did the IRS actually meet this new threshold?
They did. You see, those tapes, the church was fighting so hard to keep secret. Well, the IRS, they had gotten hold of some partial transcripts, little snippets of conversation from those tapes.
Yeah. So like little clues, little breadcrumbs?
Exactly. And these excerpts, even though they weren't the full picture, they hinted at some, let's say, questionable financial practices.
Oh, interesting. So little clues that might lead to something bigger.
Right. And for the Supreme Court, those breadcrumbs were enough. They said, okay, this meets the threshold. Now, a judge can look at those full tapes in private to see if this crime fraud exception, if it actually applies.
Wow. So the Supreme Court, they essentially cracked the door open a bit, gave judges the power to peek behind the curtain of attorney-client privilege, but only in specific cases.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But it wasn't, you know, a free pass. They made it clear that this kind of in-camera review, where the judge gets to see the documents privately, it should be a last resort. It's powerful,
right.
So it needs to be used carefully, you know, very cautiously.
It really is a legal thriller, this Zulin case. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Before we dive into all the implications and the fallout from all this, maybe we should take a quick breather. We'll be back to unpack the rest of this case in just a bit.
Welcome back. So we were talking about how United States v. Zulin kind of created this threshold standard, right, for getting around attorney-client privilege if there's that suspicion of, well, you know, a crime or fraud.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, cool, the Supreme Court gave judges this new tool, you know,
yeah,
a way to look behind the curtain, but only in very specific situations.
Exactly. It's not automatic, though, right? Even if someone meets that threshold, you know, brings enough evidence to make you suspicious, it's still ultimately up to the judge. They don't have to just, like, automatically agree to look at those confidential documents.
Right. So there's still a layer of, like, you know, judicial discretion there. It's not a free-for-all.
Exactly. The judge has to weigh a bunch of things, right?
Yeah.
How strong is the evidence? You know, are the allegations really specific? How sensitive is the stuff they're asking to look at? Are there other ways to get that information? Maybe less intrusive ways. It's a balancing act, that's for sure.
And, I mean, just to be clear, this threshold standard, yeah, it's more flexible than that old independent evidence rule, but it still needs, you know, some real evidence.
Yeah.
We're not talking about just, like, guesses or fishing expeditions.
Oh, totally. Remember, the standard is like a factual basis adequate to support a good faith belief by a reasonable person, right? It's got to be concrete, even if it's circumstantial evidence.
Like those partial transcripts in Zulin, right, with the IRS. They had specific stuff about potentially shady financial talks, enough to justify taking a closer look.
Exactly. And something else the Supreme Court said was, like, the evidence to meet that threshold, it doesn't have to be totally separate from the privileged stuff itself, you know?
Wait, so you're saying, like, sometimes you can use evidence from the stuff that might be privileged to argue that it shouldn't be privileged? That seems kind of circular, doesn't it?
It does a bit, yeah. But they realize, the Supreme Court, I mean, that sometimes the type of wrongdoing, you just can't get evidence without peeking at some of the material, right?
So it's got that flexibility built in to deal with the messiness, I guess. But we got to remember, right, Zulin didn't just get rid of attorney-client privilege entirely. Courts can't just go snooping through private conversations whenever they want.
Exactly. The Supreme Court was clear. This in-camera review, it's a last resort. It's about preventing abuse of the privilege, not destroying the confidentiality that lawyers and clients need, you know?
So it's like this, like, balancing act, right? Protecting confidentiality, but also making sure it's not used to hide wrongdoing.
Yeah, a delicate balance, for sure. And anytime you have something delicate like that, there are people who worry it might tip too far one way, you know? Even some of the justices on the Supreme Court had concerns. Like, in the dissenting opinions, they said, even this more flexible threshold thing, it could lead to judges, you know, overreaching.
So they were worried about judges getting too curious, wanting to pry into private conversations too much?
Right. They said even the possibility of a judge seeing those conversations could make clients and lawyers clam up, you know? Clients might hold back, worried that anything they say could be looked at later.
Yeah, that could really mess with the trust. That's so important, right?
Yeah.
If you can't be honest with your lawyer, you're not going to get the best help.
Exactly. And some legal experts have even said that Zulin kind of flips the burden of proof, you know? Instead of the person accusing needing to prove their case, it's like the person claiming the privilege has to prove they're not doing anything wrong.
Right.
And that's a lot harder to do.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like, instead of innocent until proven guilty, it's like guilty until proven innocent in these privilege fights.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. And that's why really getting Zulin, you know, the nuances of it and how to handle that threshold standard, it's so important for lawyers, no matter which side they're on.
Right. So if you're a lawyer and you're trying to get around attorney-client privilege, Zulin gives you a way to maybe do it. But you got to be smart about how you gather and present your evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're the one defending the privilege, well, you better be ready to fight to keep those conversations private.
Absolutely. It raises the stakes for everyone.
And Zulin, it goes way beyond just those big legal battles you see in the movies, right? It affects lawyers and clients in all sorts of areas, I bet.
Oh, for sure. Think about, like, the corporate world, right? If a company's investigating some kind of misconduct internally, Zulin could come up if they try to use attorney-client privilege to protect sensitive discussions. Or in estate planning, you know, if someone claims there was fraud or undue influence, Zulin might allow a court to look at conversations between, like, the deceased person and their lawyer.
So it's not just some abstract legal idea. It has real-world effects on regular people.
And people are still talking about it, debating it, citing it in legal stuff all the time. Lower courts are still figuring out how to use Zolan in different situations, and legal scholars are like exploring what it means for new areas of law, like cybersecurity and data privacy.
It's amazing, right, how a case from, what, over 30 years ago is still so relevant and important today.
Yeah, it really is. And it shows, like, the law is alive, you know? It's not just a bunch of rules set in stone. It changes and adapts to new problems, new ways society is changing. Zolan reminds us that finding that balance between protecting secrets and making sure people are accountable, it's a process, a constant struggle. And courts got to be really careful when they're dealing with this attorney-client privilege stuff.
And it also shows, like, how important it is to stay in the loop, right? To keep learning. Even if you're an experienced lawyer, you got to keep up with new cases, new trends, how things are being interpreted, even with stuff that seems settled, you know?
Totally agree. You can never stop learning in this field. We've covered a ton today, though. Maybe we should pause here for a second, catch our breath. We'll come back and finish up this deep dive, talk about some key takeaways and what this all means going forward.
Okay, so we're back. We've been talking all about United States v. Zolan, this big case about attorney-client privilege. And wow, we started with a pretty simple question, right? But it's gotten really interesting. You know, legal strategy, ethics, balancing those competing interests in the justice system.
Yeah, it's like a textbook example of how one case, it can have this ripple effect, you know? It impacts the people involved, sure, but it also changes the legal landscape for years. And Zolan's still making waves.
Definitely. And it's kind of crazy that even after all this time, decades later, lawyers and clients are still dealing with the fallout, figuring out what it all means. It's like Zolan threw this wrench into things, right? This
Yeah.
idea that, hey, maybe a privilege isn't as rock solid as we thought. That must change how lawyers approach their work.
Oh, yeah. Imagine being a lawyer and knowing that, like, theoretically, a judge could end up reading your conversations with your client. It makes you really think about everything you say, every email, every document. You're always thinking, what if someone else sees this?
Yeah, I bet. You almost have to be like a legal psychic, right?
Yeah.
Predicting how things could be interpreted later on.
Kind of, yeah. And that's why Zolan really emphasizes how important it is to be clear, to be precise, and to always make sure everything you're doing with your client is above board. Clients got to be totally honest with their lawyers, even if it's not pretty. And lawyers have to be super careful about documenting their advice, making sure it's all legitimate legal strategy.
Because if those conversations sound like even a little bit like, you know, helping someone commit a crime or cover something up, then boom, that privilege disappears.
Exactly. And remember, we talked about how the burden of proof can switch in these situations. That's why it's so crucial to have good documentation, to really understand the crime fraud exception, and to be on the same page with your client.
It sounds like Zolan raised the bar for everyone involved. But it's not just about, like, staying out of trouble. Right. It's also about how things look from the outside.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Even if you're totally convinced you're doing everything right, legally and ethically, you have to think about how it might look to someone else, like a judge who's reading your stuff. You know, something that seems harmless, out of context, it could raise red flags.
So it's not just about avoiding doing bad things. It's about managing risk, being proactive, thinking steps ahead.
Right on. It's about being a good lawyer, but also a good strategist.
Okay, so we've covered a lot about Zolan. If our listeners only remember a few things from this deep dive, what would you want those to be, like the key takeaways?
Well, first, Zolan shows us that the law, it's not stuck in time, you know? It's always changing, adapting to new problems, new situations. What was settled law years ago might be totally different today.
So never stop learning, right?
Yeah.
Even if you're an experienced lawyer, you got to keep up with new cases, new trends, how courts are interpreting things, even stuff that seems basic.
Absolutely. And the second thing I think is that Zolan is a warning about confidentiality. You know, attorney-client privilege is super important, a foundation of our system, but it's not invincible. There are exceptions, and they can be really complicated and subtle.
So Zolan isn't just some abstract legal thing. It has real consequences for anyone who's getting legal advice or giving it.
Exactly. It reminds us about being transparent, doing things the right way, and knowing where the lines are when it comes to privilege.
Well, I think we really dug into United States v. Zolan today. It's been a fascinating look at this case and how it's affected legal strategy, ethics, and that constant search for balance in our justice system.
Yeah, it's a case that people are still talking about, still arguing about. It really changed things.
So to our listeners, next time you're dealing with, you know, confidential legal stuff, remember Zolan. Remember that even the most private conversations, sometimes they can end up in the spotlight. Be careful.
And like always, keep learning, stay curious, keep those legal minds sharp.
That's it for our deep dive on United States v. Zolin. Thanks for joining us.